set for hearing today, two by non-oral conference. And so I'll ask the clerk to call the second case on the calendar, and then I'll just have a couple of quick remarks.
Now calling A20-1175, State v. Spencer.
All right, a couple of quick things. We are appearing by Zoom today. With that exception, everything else is as normal. The regular procedures of the Court of Appeals apply, and I know both counsel are familiar with them. So I won't belabor that point. But one thing to note is that no recording by the parties is allowed of these proceedings. The court is recording these proceedings, and we'll make an audio recording available on the court's website. So before you begin your remarks, I would ask you to identify yourself for the record as well as the client you represent, and then keep your eye on the clock, which should be visible on your screen. We very much look forward to the conversation with you. So with that, counsel for appellant, we're ready for you to begin.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Devi Axelson. I represent the appellant, Raphael Spencer. Trooper Anderson mistakenly believed that the presence of an uncased, unarmed bow in the front seat of Mr. Spencer's vehicle gave him probable cause, or as he put it, reasonable suspicion to search the car for additional weapons. This mistaken belief led to an illegal search of Mr. Spencer's vehicle and the discovery of alleged methamphetamine, which was the basis for Trooper Anderson's arrest of Mr. Spencer. Because Trooper Anderson didn't have probable cause to believe that Mr. Spencer was driving while intoxicated at the time of the search and the time that Mr. Spencer was put in the back of the squad car, the result or the evidence from the search must be suppressed, and the evidence from that search led to the search warrant that also must be suppressed, that leads to the one conviction that Mr. Spencer was convicted of in this case. This court doesn't need to look any further in determining whether Trooper Anderson believed Mr. Spencer was intoxicated than the dash cam video that established that Trooper Anderson was intently focused on the presence of the uncased bow in the front seat of the vehicle, and that he told Mr. Spencer on multiple occasions that he was going to be free to leave after Trooper Anderson placed him in the back of the squad car and conducted a search looking for any additional weapons. He told Mr. Spencer that if he didn't find anything additional...
You know, Mr. Axelson, you know, as you well know, the police say lots of different things at lots of different times. And, you know, that's that. Let's say I disagree with you that I think there was probable cause to arrest your client for driving while impaired. And that's not based on the bow or any of this other stuff. It was based on, you know, his driving conduct, his post-driving conduct, his discussions, and seemed to be incoherence about where he was going with the storage stuff, his walking, all of that. And I know that, you know, the officer kept telling me, you know, he's not under arrest, but, you know, we don't really look at, you know, we look at whether there's probable cause apart from what the police say. Explain to me then, if the officer believes he's under the influence, why the second part of Gantt is not a loser for you in terms of searching the vehicle without a warrant?
I'm assuming you don't want me to respond to the first part of why an officer potentially would lie, or just jump right to the second part of Gantt.
Well, I mean, I know there's a bill in the legislature now saying they're not allowed to lie, but you know, during investigations, they constantly say, well, you know, we have your DNA, when they really don't. So
yeah,
apart from all of that, and then if you want to contest the argument about there is no probable cause, judge, you're wrong on that too. But assuming I'm right, that I think anyway, speaking for myself and not my cherished colleagues, that there is probable cause, why doesn't the second part of Gantt, why isn't that good here?
Well, number one, everything he, so, well, maybe I want to jump into the thing about the officer first, is that you know, he testified at the evidentiary hearing. He didn't get up and say, you know, I was trying to build rapport with Mr. Spencer. I thought that if I told him, you know, that he was going to be free to leave, he would be much easier to deal with, or he would maybe provide me with information. He didn't do any of those things and didn't come in and testify that, that he didn't withdraw any of the things that he had said to Mr. Spencer about how he was going to be free to leave and how he was only investigating the presence of the weapon. So there, you know, if it was a situation where a cop came in and said, yeah, I lied to him, I was trying to make him happy. Sometimes dealing with people who are intoxicated, you have to be really careful so you don't escalate the situation. But he didn't say any of those things.
Mr. Axelson, just so I can try to get you to turn to that second exception to the Gantt case, because I do think that's very important for today's decision. Your analysis of the officer's statements all is certainly, you know, got some legal validity to it. Here's the problem. As Judge Connolly indicated, we do an objective analysis of whether probable cause existed. And the statements of the officer certainly are wrapped into that. It's something we look at and consider. We don't ignore it. But, it, you know, it's not sufficient, right? We're not going to look to the officer's subjective intent for any of this. It is going to be an objective analysis. So if you don't mind, I am curious to hear why you think Judge Connolly's summary of probable cause isn't sufficient to uphold the district court's decision on the arrest, because I think it is. The district court didn't make any errors in its findings as to the probable cause to arrest. But really,
I'm not contesting. So I would say that I would agree with the court that there was reasonable suspicion that he was intoxicated based on the things that the officer said. But the state had to establish probable cause here. And I think that's the step that we're lacking. And I think, in, you know, certainly there's not a requirement that an officer, in order to establish probable cause, has to do field sobriety tests. But officers do field sobriety tests because they like to shore up probable cause to arrest somebody for driving under the influence. And here, the officer didn't do any of those tests. Again, that goes to, you know, his subjective belief that he didn't think this guy was truly intoxicated, but it also failed to shore up the probable cause component. So on the first part of the test, I think that's why, you know, we're in that area between reasonable suspicion and probable cause. And again, the burden is on the state in these situations on a you know, unwarranted arrest, you know, to justify the arrest of Mr. Spencer. On the second component of that, in you know, our case is much more favorable than some of the cases that I cited in the brief on that second part of Gantt, is that the officer doesn't smell any drugs or alcohol emanating from the vehicle. He doesn't see anything, you know, other than this uncased bow that he was focused on, that would establish that, you know, that he would find additional evidence of potential driving under the influence if he searched the car. He didn't see, you know, bottles or empty bottles, which officers sometimes testify about in, you know, these cases that, you know, the court sees every day. He didn't see anything in addition to some of the suspicions he had about Mr. Spencer's intoxication. And so that's why the state failed on that second prong of Gantt. And the district court never addressed that second prong of Gantt. I don't know that the state really even addresses it in their court of appeals brief. And I think that's the problem for the state here, is it's its burden to establish that he had a reasonable belief that there would be evidence found of drugs, alcohol, you know, that led to what he believed was Mr. Spencer's intoxication. But he doesn't find any of those things, or he doesn't explain any of those things. He doesn't say any of those things. And none of those things are present in this case to justify, you know, that second prong of Gantt.
So let me probe that a little bit. I think I follow your reasoning, but just to be sure, let me ask you about it. It seems to me that you're saying, so Gantt, we're alluding to it, but not saying it. Gantt says that an automobile search incident to arrest may be appropriate in a situation where the officer reasonably believes that evidence of the crime might be in the vehicle, right?
Yep.
And that's, you know, so it's an evidence preservation thing. So you kept alluding to things like, well, here we don't have evidence of smell of drugs, you know, or odor, or visible containers, so such as alcohol, something like that. We have none of that in this case. And I think what you're saying is, if you get to this part, you know, where there's probable cause to arrest, which I realize you disagree on, but just go there with me for a second. It was probable cause of driving while impaired, not probable cause of possession of, you know, alcohol or some other an illegal substance. So is that your point?
No, so my point is that clearly there's not, you know, Gant goes away from this fact that the officers just can automatically search a vehicle when they're arresting them. So Gant kind of undercuts that. So, you know, this court can't, you know, follow Gant and then say that in every case of probable cause for driving while intoxicated, that the officer can then just willy-nilly search the car for evidence of that. The evidence of driving while intoxicated is on Mr. Spencer's person and in his body. So, you know, whether he gives him a PBT, you know, at the scene or, you know, has him do field sobriety tests, those are the type of evidence that he can look for in this situation. There isn't evidence here of anything he sees in the car. And because he doesn't smell anything emanating from the car, it's less likely and falls short of this reasonable belief that Mr. Spencer had done something in the car while driving, you know, whether it was drinking alcohol or smoking methamphetamine or marijuana or anything else. And because the officer doesn't see any of those things, there's not a reasonable belief that Mr. Spencer had done those things and that the crime that he's investigating, driving while intoxicated, will be, you know, evidence of that will be discovered in the car. The evidence of that is going to be discovered on Mr. Spencer's person.
You're skipping over a number of other facts in the case. So there, and Judge Connolly alluded to them earlier. There were a lot of suspicious circumstances that the officer did note after the stop and before the arrest. So before Mr. Spencer was placed in the squad, and they have to do with the blacking out of the windows, his behavior around the car, his evasiveness in response to several questions and changing of stories. There are a number of them that we could view as objective evidence that there's something more than a DWI going on here. So is that sufficient to tip the scales in favor of the second exception in Gant?
Well, all that evidence seems to, I mean, at least for Trooper Anderson, focused on the uncased bow.
You know, well, you keep going back to his subjective belief, and it's just not enough. So can we focus on the objective facts and evidence and findings of the district court?
Yeah, I don't have anything additional to add. I mean, I think that the, you know,
well,
on that
Ms.
second
Gregson, what about, I mean, I understand your points, but but what about sort of, I thought there was some testimony or evidence in the record of him sort of, you know, shifting away to try to sort of, you know, prevent the officer from seeing something. I mean,
and the officer does still see inside the car. He sees, you know, other than the blackened windows, which we would assume were not blackened, you know, after the police officer pulls him over. That's something that was just part of the car. So I don't know that that adds to any suspicion here.
Well, I mean, you know, there wasn't the, as I understand it, there wasn't the whole, I mean, you've got, you know, okay, he seems to be under the influence. Okay. It's not alcohol because we don't have the smell of alcohol. So, and there's no marijuana because he doesn't smell marijuana. So, I mean, meth doesn't smell, does it? I don't know.
There was no finding in the court record on that.
But. So, I mean, if you think you're under the influence and, you know, it's kind of, you know, well, gee, you know, booze, drugs, marijuana, not marijuana, don't smell it, not booze, don't smell it. Gee, I mean, it seems to me that would be the evidence of a crime that he's searching for, that it seems to me, you know, this is where I think, where I think the second prong of Gant is okay here. I'm not focused on the bow either. I mean, I'm focused on, you know, what's, because he did, well, so why am I wrong on that?
Well, I would say you actually, all the points that you just made are kind of dead on of what's the problem here, is that Trooper Anderson doesn't say any of the things you say. He doesn't say that, you know, I suspected him of you know, drinking. He doesn't say, you know, I mean, he doesn't provide any of this additional information. And he also never says that the reason he's searching the car is to find additional evidence. He doesn't say, you know, in all the meth cases I've handled, the driving while intoxicated under meth, I haven't smelled meth emanating from the car. He doesn't say it's typical that people who I stop and pull over for driving while under the influence of methamphetamine commonly have meth pipes like the one that was found in the car. He doesn't say any of those things. So he doesn't, you know, and again, it's the state's burden. So that Trooper Anderson has to provide some of that information, you know, at the evidentiary hearing. It's not for this court after the fact to try to justify Trooper Anderson's actions if he failed to do that themselves and if the state didn't shore up its record at the original evidentiary hearing. So I think that's why we fall short on the second prong of Gantt, is that Trooper Anderson doesn't provide any of that reasonable basis for searching the car. There isn't
again,
some of the
don't
things.
We have to look, as Judge Bracco pointed out, don't we have to look at objectively at the facts?
That's true, but the facts here require Trooper Anderson to reasonably believe this, and if the facts
don't support
that.
The record does show that he did ask if he had been drinking or if he, you know, if he had had anything of an intoxicating.
Your Honor, is it okay for me to answer the question?
Go ahead.
Yes, so he did ask. It's not, you know, again, and that would go on the first prong or the first step of what the court should decide here, is that's whether there's probable cause.
I know, but you seem to be focused on the bow and seem to be focusing on that. But I mean, the evidence is that there was an inquiry as to whether he had had anything to drink or if he had anything of an intoxicating nature. And there's no dispute that we've got a number of other objectively looking at the facts that he crossed the center line, he exceeded the speed limit, his license had been suspended, he had suspicious behavior, he didn't know the full name of the owner of the car, he didn't know where the storage locker was. I mean, he had all kinds of stories. He kept trying to stand in front of the car in a certain way, like he was hiding something. And then also he was acting, moving his arms and touching his head, was talkative, moving around the vehicle constantly. With all those facts, wasn't there enough here for our court to say or to find that there was enough here for there to be a reasonable suspicion and that there's probably some drugs in that car?
Well, Judge, Your Honor, I would say that all of those facts go towards the first prong of what you have to decide here. That's the probable cause to arrest. I think what you need in order to establish that second prong of Gantt is something specific to this case, why the officer reasonably believed that he was going to find evidence of either drugs or alcohol used to justify, you know, arresting him for driving while intoxicated. And that's what's lacking in this case. And that's what the state failed to meet their burden. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, counsel. And of course, the appellant will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. So if you want to follow up on any of these points, then you can do that. With that, I think we're ready to hear from the respondent. The clock has been changed and counsel can proceed.
Thank you, Your Honors. Katie Scher, an Otter State Assistant County Attorney for Otter Tail County, representing the state in this matter, the respondent. As the court has correctly already pointed out, there was significant probable cause for the officer to proceed in the way that he did, as far as probable cause to determine that the appellant in this matter was under the influence of something. And the officer certainly acted in his discretion. The testimony at the evidentiary hearing, the parties did stipulate that the officer does have the credential, he does have the training and background, and that was all stipulated to proceed in the manner that he did. He testified at the evidentiary hearing that he had significant experience, specifically with driving under the influence of controlled substances. And in each step that the trooper does take in this matter, he is starting with the least restrictive in terms of questioning the defendant before he moves on to a more restrictive and more intrusive manner. And each of his steps is supported in each step that he takes, he does gain additional probable cause for moving to the next step. When the officer first
Counsel, before you go along this line, which is, you know, sort of the expansion of the stop analysis, I'd like to, if we could, stay focused in part on the second exception in Gantt. That would be helpful to the court. So I'd like to call your attention to the district court's decision and some of the findings that I don't see challenged, although, of course, appellant's counsel does make a wide-ranging challenge to many things. But the district court on page 4 of its determination said that Trooper Anderson suspected the defendant was to be impaired by a controlled substance and otherwise involved in criminal activity. And preceding that are a number of these findings that we've all kind of quickly alluded to, you know, about his behavior, the speeding, the crossing the center line, the his behavior after the stop, a number of other things. I just won't do all the details. So if you'd help me out here. So that does say that Trooper Anderson suspected Mr. Spencer was impaired by a controlled substance, not alcohol, and otherwise advised in criminal activity. What is that criminal activity that you would argue the state had probable cause to arrest Mr. Spencer for? As they placed him in the vehicle, not later. I realize other things happened after that arrest, but assuming the arrest happened when he was placed in the squad.
Your Honor, I do believe that the officer does indicate both in his report that was accepted by at the evidentiary hearing and stipulated to by counsel, as well as through the dash cam that was also stipulated by counsel, that the officer does, by his questioning in both of those things, indicate that he was arresting him for driving under the influence of a controlled substance. I think there is a significant chain then for him going into the vehicle and searching for a controlled substance. But he also lays out through his questioning that there may be additional indicia of different criminal activity. Certainly the fact that he's driving around with a car full of shingles, a TV for his father, who he's already said is in the cities where he's just come from. He doesn't have a key to the storage unit. The owners of the vehicle are in Park Rapids, which again is a significant different distance. These are all significant factors that would lead the officer to believe that in addition to the controlled substance, there may be other criminal activity at foot. And I think the officer also supports that by systematically going through and checking to see if the serial numbers to items in the vehicle are matching up, if they're coming back as stolen, if the vehicle is in fact stolen by checking that information. I think that it's also supported that.
So that's all really interesting. And I think some merit to what you're saying. Here's my problem. I read Gantt to say, the second exception of Gantt to say that an officer has reason to search a vehicle when doing so will produce evidence of the crime of arrest. So here we're talking, you're describing things like motor vehicle theft, maybe theft of other items. You know, that wasn't going to be inside the vehicle, right? Absolutely. Evidence of that. No. So if you just try to pivot back to what is the evidence of the crime of arrest, suspected crime of arrest, probable cause crime. What is that the officer was looking for inside the vehicle?
And Your Honor, I think it's relevant that the officer was indeed looking for evidence of controlled substance in gestation. And I think that this court can look back at cases and see that oftentimes when a person is driving under the influence of controlled substance, there's also evidence of that use in controlled substance within the vehicle itself, either through paraphernalia or through the drug itself. I think Judge Connolly did rightly point out that there wasn't evidence or an odor of alcohol or marijuana. And so that the officer is justified in his suspicion that there is a different kind of controlled substance that there may be evidence of within the vehicle, an odorless substance. And so
if we follow this reasoning to its logical conclusion, does that mean, because this is what Mr. Axelson argued, that does that mean that the second exception in Gantt allows officers to search a vehicle basically every time they have probable cause to arrest for a DWI? Because if it's not a controlled substance suspicion, it would be alcohol or some other substance. So wouldn't the officer always be able to search the inside of a vehicle?
Your Honor, I think that the officer only gets to that point if they do have some justification that they believe that, first, the driver is under the influence, and second, that that ingestion may have occurred while the person was in the vehicle. I mean, there's certainly situations where it would not merit. I know if the officer is only observe the person in the vehicle for a short period of time or something like that. But the defendant in this matter indicated that he was coming from the cities. He was in that vehicle for a significant period of time. And so the officer has appropriate rationale in thinking that that ingestion occurred while he was in the vehicle. The cities are...
Sure, help me. I have some sympathy for Mr. Axelson's point. You know, obviously... You know, you can't search the trunk, for driving under the influence if you're looking for, the beer cans that you're drinking. You know, you're not drinking the cans from the trunk. But as I understand it, I mean, the officer was sort of looking, his search was, around where, you would be easily to reach your drugs or your meth or your stuff. I mean, is that a fair statement? And so maybe that's the solution to Mr. Axelson's problems. If we think you're driving under the influence of drugs or booze, you can't search the trunk for that because, that you can't reach into the trunk to drink. But, where is it going to be? Well, it's going to be, kind of where it would be if you're, getting a hit. I mean, and that's what he did, right?
Absolutely, Your Honor. And as the officer indicates through his testimony and through his report, while he was talking with the defendant, he continuously tried to turn and block the officer's view from things that were directly in that area of movement of the defendant. And so that also supports his indication that there may be controlled substances, the basis of the impairment, the controlled substance impairment within the vehicle and within the reach of the driver right there. And so I think that the second prong of Gantz is met in that the officer has numerous steps and numerous suggestions throughout his stop to support that he does believe he's going to find evidence of the crime of driving while under controlled substance.
Can I ask you this? And if I understand Mr. Axelson's argument, he's basically distinguishing this case from the case where there's a smell of marijuana, there's a smell of alcohol, which indicates there may be some reason to believe that that substance is in the car. Here, what do you have that it indicates that there's going to be any evidence of drugs in that car? And that, I think that's his argument. And he can correct me on rebuttal if that's wrong. And that this case is distinguishable from those other cases. Otherwise, if all you have to show is indicia of intoxication, anytime anyone appears to be high on something, there's going to be a search of a vehicle. If you interpret it the way that you're talking about, why is that argument? I mean, how do you respond to that argument?
And Your Honor, there's certainly more than just an indicia of intoxication here. In addition to that, the officer is through his expertise as an officer, through his training and experience, which was stipulated to, indicating that he's seeing signs that there may be something in the front seat or in the console area that the defendant is attempting to hide from the officer. And I think that, in addition to all the other things that he's observed, does support that second prong of Gantz. In addition to that, and this is a little off, but as the district court judge does indicate, there's other basis to support that search warrant of the defendant other than what's located in the vehicle. That search warrant could stand alone without what's located there. There's significant indication of intoxication through what Judge Vatwell has pointed out through the reason for the stop of the vehicle. His story doesn't make sense. He doesn't have a key.
So you're saying there is enough to get the warrant even without the evidence that was obtained from the car?
Absolutely.
Ms. Scherr, would you refresh my recollection? Did Mr. Axelson's client fall asleep in the back of the car before the search?
He did while the officer was searching, Your Honor. But before that period, the officer also indicates that he's very agitated and very excitable. And so he goes from one extreme to the other very quickly, towards the point where the officer is going to that level where he's going to be searching the vehicle. The defendant is indicating he's extremely tired and just exhausted. And that as well, based on the officer's training and experience, could certainly indicate the use of controlled substances by the defendant.
And can I follow up to with regard to Gant? Would you concede that Gant does not give a carte blanche a right to the police to search any vehicle anytime they think someone's intoxicated? You would agree that they you have to show more?
Absolutely, Judge. Absolutely.
Just intoxication. All right. But you think there's enough here that would have justified the search?
I do, Your Honor. And I think that while there's other factors, I think the strongest factor is the interactions that the officer has with the defendant himself, with trying to prevent the officer from seeing into the vehicle. He even indicates that when the officer first indicates he's going to be searching the vehicle, the defendant wants to reach in and grab his cell phone. The cell phone that happens to be in the center console where some of this paraphernalia is found later. And so I think that in addition to during this whole time that there's interacting, the defendant is attempting to move his body into positions where the officer can't see in. And so I think that also supports the search into the vehicle. And unless Your Honors have any other questions, I don't have anything else to propose to the court. I would say that I do believe that the district court did make a very succinct and methodical order in this matter, and I'm asking the court to confirm that. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, counsel. With that, I think we're nearly ready. Mr. Axelson, for your rebuttal. Thank you. You can proceed when you're ready.
Thank you, Your Honors. The district court did write an extensive memo, but failed to address the second prong of Gant. The state's expert, who they touted his expertise on drug recognition throughout the last 15 minutes, that officer didn't say one word to justify why he thought there would be evidence of drugs or alcohol to establish a driving while intoxicated charge and arrest here. He does testify generally about Mr. Spencer's suspicious behavior, but not once does he say that things that I saw, things that I've seen in the past, things based on my expertise as a drug recognition expert or anything else, he doesn't testify to any of those things. He doesn't mention any of those things. These are all things that we're going back and trying to put the record back together and try to say, well, maybe this would have established that he would have this belief or that he would have these suspicions. But Trooper Anderson, who's the expert here, he doesn't say any of those things. It's the state's burden to establish that second prong of Gant. It's the state's
would you agree, though, that even under Gant, though, that second prong, it requires that we objectively look at the facts, whether it was reasonable for any police officer to believe that the vehicle contains evidence of the offense of the arrest?
Yes, I would agree that, that you should objectively look at the facts. And I think the problem here is that those facts don't lead directly to providing him with a reasonable belief that Spencer has the evidence that would support a charge of driving while intoxicated in that vehicle. And if there was, Trooper Anderson would have testified to that. He would have testified that, that falling asleep after being agitated slightly before shows recent methamphetamine use. As far as we know, because he didn't testify to it, it means that, it might mean that he smoked methamphetamine in the cities before he got in his car so that he could drive for a way. Again, we don't know those inferences as practitioners and judges, because that's the state's expert's role to provide that information.
Well, I kind of zeroed in on that issue because I did make that distinction, and that was a fair distinction that you're making with regard to alcohol or marijuana, that you do need, if it's some other controlled substance that has no smell, you've got to show something. But the response of the state is that he was standing there and visibly trying to hide and standing in ways that it looked like he was trying to hide something in the car.
I mean, I've watched the video multiple times, although it's been a while. You know, there might be one small point of the video where he's kind of moving in front of the window. The officer sees in front of the window. He sees everything inside the window. I don't know that that supports, and clearly, again, look at the dash cam video. Trooper Anderson is not investigating that. This is all, once Trooper Anderson finds the alleged meth in the car, that's when he really zeroes in on driving while intoxicated. And he really doesn't do so until he gets back to the jail. We have to look at the time he does that search. And here he doesn't shore any of that up at the evidentiary hearing. The state doesn't shore any of that up at the evidentiary hearing. People apparently didn't read Gantt, didn't read that second prong. And it's the state's burden to establish that second prong of Gantt and didn't do so. I just want to speak real briefly on the search warrant. Again, under the Liebert test, the state fails on that second prong of that, had he not found, he repeatedly told this guy that I'm going to let you go. Had he not found the pipe and the suspected methamphetamine in the car, he was not applying for a search warrant, of driving while intoxicated. He wouldn't have told Mr. Spencer multiple times, I'm going to let you go. And under the Liebert test, you look at those facts too. In determining whether or not a search warrant would have been requested in this case. And it certainly wouldn't have based on the facts.
And as part of the search warrant, wasn't a reference made to what was found in the car too? Am I correct?
Yeah, I think that the strongest evidence in the search warrant is what's found in the car and then the failure of the field sobriety tests at the jail after his arrest. Thank you very much. And I ask that you rule in my favor. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Our thanks to both attorneys. In this case, this matter has been well briefed and well argued. It is now submitted to this court for its decision, and we will issue a decision within the statutory framework.